Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get straight to the docket. First, new video released in the case of the OnlyFans model charged with murder. Is it relevant or not? Some new information on the Mar-a-Lago search warrant. Is Letitia Stalk crazy or just crazy like a fox? We will find out next week. This is why some people just can't be in society. And who do you want your kids to hang out with? You may want to check them out. Where is Kylie Rodney? Drew Peterson, you'll get nothing and you'll like it. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, everyone, you know the drill. Before we get to the docket, subscribe if you haven't, like if you do, hit that bell for notifications, and remember, you can listen to us all the time on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Let's go ahead and get to the docket for August 12th of 2022, and let's open the docket. First, the lawyers for the OnlyFans model charged with murdering her boyfriend has condemned prosecutors releasing footage of her attacking him and insisted that he was, in fact, the abuser. Courtney Clenny was detained Wednesday at a rehab center in Hawaii's Big Island, where she was being treated for alcohol issues as well as PTSD. She's been charged with second-degree murder over the April 3rd death of her boyfriend, Christian Obumseli, at the home they shared in Miami, Florida. Now, Clenny insisted she stabbed Obumseli in self-defense after he grabbed her by the throat. Well, prosecutors on Thursday released video of Clenny attacking Obumseli in an elevator on February 21st, but Clenny's lawyer, Frank Prieto, said the video was irrelevant and likely inadmissible. Yeah, I would beg probably to differ. I get it. I'd make the objection. 404B evidence, uncharged misconduct, does not go to the charge at hand. But if one were to put up evidence to say I'm a peaceful person, I never did anything wrong, guess what? The door is opened to this video. Take a look at it. Mr. Prieto says this case is about self-defense and the facts will be presented at trial and they will prove this. Now, Prieto spoke after, like I said, they released this video to support their case against Clenny. Clenny has allegedly kicked Obumseli out of their luxury apartment in the last week of March, just days before she allegedly killed him. The documents also show that they had furious fights when they lived in Austin, Texas, with her allegedly flinging a huge painting from their balcony. Now, as they appear to dismiss the model's claims that she drew the knife, which prosecutors appear to dismiss the model's claim that she threw the knife, which killed Obumseli across the room from over 10 feet away, saying that the attack was launched from a close proximity. Now, Clenny was found by police coated in blood in her Miami condo, but was released because it was thought that she had acted in self-defense. The new video clip shows her entering the elevator as Clenny hits the touchscreen inside to choose a floor. Obumseli appears to try to calm her down, but she turns to him, slaps him, and pushed him multiple times. She jumped up, grabbed his hair from behind, wrenching his head backwards before punching him in the side of the head. Obumseli tucked her under his arm and tried to restrain her before pressing the elevator button for their floor, but she continued to launch repeated attacks on him as he tried to block her blows. Clenny kept up her attack even as the door opened and they spilled into the corridor, appearing to shout at each other. Like I said, this was released and unsealed in regards to the prosecutor's documents and evidence that they show that they have against the model. Their evidence is going to show that they had a turbulent relationship, that probably neither one of them were completely calm at all times, but obviously Ms. Clenny is the one that's charged because Obumseli is now deceased. Now, when the couple broke up in March and Clenny evicted Obumseli from the apartment, Clenny's mother, Deborah, came to stay with her. The couple rekindled their relationship on April 1st, and he moved back in, but the arrest warrants say arguments began almost immediately. Now, officers were called the same night, and Clenny appeared intoxicated, though no arrests were made. 2 days later, the day that Obumseli died, it had been peaceful and the couple playing with their dogs at home, according to the police documents. Obomseli went to Subway to buy them both sandwiches about 1:15 p.m. and got back about 4:32 p.m. Clenny had just posted a new video on Instagram, and prosecutors think the stabbing occurred in the 13 minutes after her boyfriend returned. She was thought to have been on the phone to her mom, who had said she heard her daughter arguing with Obomseli and claim he was lying. The model called the police at 4:57 p.m. to report the stabbing and can be heard saying, "I'm sorry, baby." The warrant added, on the call, the victim can be heard in the background repeatedly saying he is dying and that he cannot feel his arm. There was a large amount of blood throughout the condominium at different levels, including two large pools, evidence the victim was bleeding for an extended period of time before the police were called. The court documents go on to claim that her mother texted her to tell her to mention self-defense and advised her not to say anything to the police without an attorney. But Clenny spoke to the police, arguing she grabbed a knife because Obomseli pinned her against a wall by her throat. Detectives pointed out the documents that there were no injuries on her, and at no time did she claim the victim was armed with any weapon. Now, the chief medical examiner also poured through and cast doubt on her claim that she had thrown the knife, saying, "I don't think that this was, I don't know." The coroner added, "I really don't know if this was justified at all. The knife wound penetrated his chest for 8 centimeters and was pointed slightly downward, not throwing across the room. Just thinking the way common folk think, not like fancy medical doctors." Well, the state attorney, Catherine Fernandez-Rundle, who's prosecuting the case, said the violent and toxic two-year relationship of Christian Obomseli and Courtney Clenny did not have to end in tragedy with Christian's murder as a victim of domestic violence. We'll continue to follow this story. I mean, when you have a adult entertainment OnlyFans model kill her boyfriend, allegedly, of course, because we'll give her that presumption of innocence, you really, why wouldn't it be interesting, right? And they arrest her in rehab. I guess she's going to the ultimate detox called county jail. All right, next on the docket, more information coming out regarding the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. Now, the warrant that authorized the search of former President Donald Trump's residence at Mar-a-Lago shows that the United States Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhardt issued it on August 5th at 12:12 p.m., nearly 3 full days before the Justice Department and FBI conducted a raid to execute the search warrant. Now, remember, normally a search warrant is good for 10 days or 14 days. That's kind of the max that the courts will give them. Now, normally when there is, in fact, a search warrant, they try to execute it quickly. Now, the raid did not occur until the morning of August 8th. When the federal agents from the FBI arrived at Mar-a-Lago to execute the search warrant. Now, the DOJ and the FBI waited several days after Reinhardt approved the warrant to conduct the raid, something that some people will argue severely undercuts the talking points of Attorney General Merrick Garland in a public statement when he broke his silence to discuss the matters in a televised prepared statement. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to give a whole lot of weight to this argument. Yes, normally, you know, if somebody is deceased, they go get a search warrant to go search the house, they execute it right away. There's a reason why the courts usually allow 10 to 14 days for a warrant, otherwise it becomes stale, and that's simply for the fact to prepare. Now, it does look a little mischievous if this was such an emergency and these documents that we'll talk about in a second were there, why didn't they rush to go get them right away? Because they could have just gone in and said, "We have a search warrant," any time of the day. Now, it is being reported that the FBI recovered 11 sets of what they refer to as classified documents, including some marked top secret and only meant to be available in special government facilities from the former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate following the raid. Now, apparently there is a leaked inventory of what was taken, and the agents removed about 20 boxes of handwritten notes, binders of photos, and Trump's clemency grant to his longtime advisor, Roger Stone. Now, among the classified materials collected were 4 sets of top secret documents, 3 sets of documents, and 3 of the confidential document nature. This is all according to this list. Top secret is the highest level of classification the U.S. government can give. followed by Secret and then Confidential. One set was marked with various classified TS/SCI documents, which is the abbreviation for Top Secret Sensitive Compartmented Information, while the list of what was taken also included information related to the President of France. The inventory did not include any more detail about each particular document. Now, Trump's lawyers have argued that the former president had used his power to declassify the now seized materials before he left the White House. So this all may be technically irrelevant if, in fact, they were declassified, and since the president has the absolute declassification authority. Second, they didn't need to seize anything. They could have had it anytime they wanted without playing politics, according to the president in his statement. It was in a secured storage area with an additional lock put on the room at the request of the government. So it's not like they didn't know the documents were there. So it appears though the federal government knew the documents were there, wouldn't just go and ask for them? I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. And what I've noticed in the comments is it doesn't really matter. If people hate the president, they hate the president and he's a criminal. If people like the president, they say it's a complete scam job. I don't know. All I know is my experience as a criminal defense attorney, I've seen lots of reasons why the police, government agencies will use nefarious and pretextual ways to get into areas that they want to search or pull people over. So color me skeptical. I don't know. And I'm not trying to say I'm supporting President Trump, but listen, if this was such an emergency, why didn't they go get it? Why didn't they just send somebody down to go get it? Why issue a search warrant? Just seems a little over the top to me, okay? Just saying. And there have been some newspaper authorities saying that the feds were looking for classified documents relating to nuclear weapons during the raid, though it's not clear whether the Bureau has recovered any such documents. Now, President Trump lashed out, claiming the report about nuclear weapons is in fact a hoax. Nuclear weapons is a hoax, he said, just like Russia, Russia, Russia was a hoax. Two impeachments were a hoax. The Mueller investigation was a hoax, and much more. He raged a little bit on his social media platform, Truth, and I'm quoting. Next on the docket, is Letitia Stout crazy or just crazy like a fox? Well, Letitia Stout's third mental health evaluation has been submitted to the court, which was needed before the murder trial could move forward. For those of you not familiar with the Letitia Stout case, she stands accused of killing her stepson, Gannon, inside their home near Colorado Springs back in 2020. Her two previous evaluations indicated that she was competent to stand trial, and the court noted nothing can be done, and the case can't move forward without this report, according to the judge, Gregory Werner. And hence the reason why they had to set the matter over for the evaluation that is being completed by the Pueblo, Colorado Mental Health Institute. And the latest evaluation was filed with the court, but details are not known at this time. They file it a little early so that each party has an opportunity to review it. And then they are all going to return on August 25th to see what the verdict is, so to speak, and see if this case moves forward. As you may recall, the new defense attorneys went with a somewhat limited defense of not guilty by reason of insanity without trying to say not guilty of reason of insanity, but there was enough of the magic words used, so therefore an evaluation was completed. Now, Letitia Stout has had several evaluations done, as we noted earlier, and she also has tried to allegedly escape twice, once on the transport back from the extradition from South Carolina, and then once from the El Paso County Jail. So obviously I don't know what's in the report, but my guess is they're going to say that she is completely competent, and everything that she said in that evaluation is probably going to be able to be used against her as well. So, Letitia Stout, crazy or crazy like a fox? I think the thing that Letitia Stout forgets is that she's not the first person that's been in this particular situation. The court's been dealing with these types of situations for a couple hundred years. And guess what? they know, and the professionals know if someone is in fact faking it. We'll wait and see. 25th, we'll see what comes about. Now, based upon Letitia's Stauch's internet history, it's reasonable to believe that she was possibly unhappily married to Mr. Stauch and had some degree of resentment toward the family as the step-parent. Now, the affidavit that's been produced in this shows that Letitia appeared to be researching a move to another state to a two-bedroom apartment. Stauch was the sole caregiver at the time of the boy's disappearance and death. Now, Gannon lived with Stauch and his father, Al Stauch, at the time of his death. And Al Stauch was on a work trip with the United States National Guard in Oklahoma when his son vanished. Gannon's biological mother, Landon Hoyt, was in South Carolina, and Gannon's body was found months later under a bridge in Pace, Florida. According to the affidavit, Stauch brutally attacked and killed Gannon inside his bedroom, despite a neighbor who said his video showed Stauch leaving with Gannon that morning and later returning home alone. Investigators believe that Gannon likely did return home with Letitia that afternoon and died inside the residence. Evidence from inside Gannon's bedroom includes blood splatter on the walls, blood that soaked through the carpet, 50 droplets on the wall, blood on the wall socket, and blood on the boy's mattress. And based on the orientation of Gannon's bed, the vast majority of the blood would be in line with the position of his head and torso. Additionally, investigators have evidence and a receipt showing that a purchase for baking soda and carpet cleaner and trash bags purchased on the 27th after 6 p.m. Investigators obtain Stauch's phone, and according to text messages, she instructed her then 17-year-old daughter to buy the items for her. Prosecutors allege that Stauch used the purchased items to clean up the crime scene, and investigators said the 17-year-old was likely not present when Gannon was killed. Now, Letitia Stauch faces charges of murder in the first degree, child abuse resulting in death, tampering with a deceased human body, and tampering with physical evidence. Obviously, we will give her the presumption of innocence. Let me know. Crazy like a fox or just crazy? Next on the docket, why some people just can't be out amongst the civilized. An Arizona Wendy's worker is facing assault charges after sucker punching a 67-year-old customer in the head after complaining about his order. Look at this surveillance video. It shows the moment that Antone Kendrick comes out from behind the register and punches the customer, knocking him unconscious. The elderly man falls to the ground. Kendrick looks at the victim as he lies on the ground before walking behind the counter, grabbing a few items, and then walking away. Police claim the victim was taken to the hospital in critical condition. The alleged assault occurred on July 26 at the Wendy's in Prescott Valley. The unsuspecting customer was licking his Frosty when Kendrick came from behind the counter and punched him in the head. Police say the man hit his head and was knocked unconscious as he fell to the ground. The victim was life flighted to a nearby hospital in critical condition. Kendrick was arrested and charged with one count of aggravated assault. Listen, we've all been there. You've had to deal with customers that aren't happy. They don't like something. But when, if ever, have you walked around the counter and punched somebody so hard, an elderly person, an at-risk adult, to the point where they knock their head on the ground and go unconscious? That just tells me, and most courts are going to look at that and say, this person cannot be in society. They are a violent person, and they cannot control their impulses and anger outbursts. And the only way and only place you should be then is prison. Next on the docket, who are your kids hanging out with? Well, a prominent coach and trainer of an elite student athlete group at a private institution in California is accused of sexually assaulting two teenage girls. Christopher Flores, known as Coach Frog, is jailed in the Orange County Jail on multiple counts of sexual assault of a minor, according to the Santa Ana Police Department. Authorities allege they first heard allegations on August 5th that the coach sexually assaulted a 14-year-old Stars Preparatory Academy enrollee multiple times in 2021. The victim reported numerous incidents occurring in the cities of Anaheim and Santa Ana, and the Stars Preparatory Academy held a training program on the Calvary Chapel High School campus in Santa Ana where several of these assaults were alleged to have taken place. Investigators allege that Flores was actually caught on audio asking the victim if she deleted those texts and if she would go out on a date with him. The audio reportedly says, "What the hell? We never get to chill, and now you don't want to go, and you're about to start school," Flores allegedly said. "When rejected, so stop being a dummy. What about tonight after practice? You want to go watch a movie?" he allegedly followed up. The report said that Flores also insisted that the teen has got to stop with the NOS, N-O-S. I'm going to plead ignorance here. Maybe someone can fill me in on what that little acronym means. Not sure. Well, the victim made a video recording the conversation she had with Flores last year, and Flores can be heard asking the victim if she deleted everything and asking her to go on a date with him. Detectives believe that Flores was asking the victim to delete text messages between them, explaining their understanding of the text messages. The victim gave a copy of the recording to the police, who immediately initiated an investigation. Authorities also allege that a 15-year-old girl made similar allegations against Flores. Now, given the defendant's proximity to minors as a coach and trainer, investigators are concerned that there may be more victims. Now, Mr. Flores was arrested on Thursday. His bail has been set at $500,000. Now, coincidentally, Mr. Flores was acquitted of a sexual assault charge in an unrelated decade-old case. And the Stars Preparatory Academy released a statement on Instagram in response to the charge against Flores. The Academy founder, Jason David, a former cornerback in the NFL, announced that the institution has severed all ties with the suspect, and we will give Mr. Flores the presumption of innocence unless he is obviously convicted or pleads guilty in a court of law. I know, we got to do it. Makes you kind of wonder, though. Gee, I wonder if they did a background search. Well, if there's somebody important in your life, if there's somebody that's come into your life that, hey, you're just not sure about, you need to go to crimetalksearch.com, do that background search, and you will get a report literally while you wait, and it will provide information on, you know, felony convictions. Do they own property? Have they been divorced? Do they have any judgments against them? Hey, it'll also give you information about their phone numbers, email addresses that they use. Maybe the person has 6-7 emails. Why are they only giving you one? Little things you may want to ask them about. What are they using those emails for? Searching the internet for inappropriate things? You never know. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Where is Kylie Rodney? She's missing. So the frantic search continues for the missing 16-year-old California girl who authorities fear was abducted from an end-of-school party over the weekend. Kylie Rodney was last seen at the party near the Prosser family campground in Truckee, just north of Lake Tahoe, at about 12:30 a.m. on Saturday, according to the police. Now, the authorities say that the teen's silver 2013 Honda CR-V is also missing, and her cell phone has been out of service since the party. Kylie had been at the end-of-school festivities with more than 100 other kids and young adults. Authorities believe she may have been abducted on her way home because they haven't been able to locate her vehicle. Lindsay Rodney's mother issued a desperate plea for the public's help on Sunday, saying that her family just wants her home. In a video statement, the mother did say, if anybody out there knows where she is, if you know anything about the case, please come forward. Kylie is described as 5'7" and blonde hair with hazel eyes. She was last seen wearing green Dickies pants and a black tank top and some jewelry. The teen also has numerous piercings, including a nose ring, and authorities have set up a tip line if anyone has any information. You'll get nothing and you'll like it. Drew Peterson, the retired Bolingbrook, Illinois police sergeant convicted of murdering his third wife, Kathleen Savio, will not receive a police pension. That according to a ruling by an intermediate Illinois appellate court in Peterson v. the Board of Trustees of the Bolingbrook Police Pension Fund held that the pension board was correct to terminate Peterson's benefits because the murder of his ex-wife was related to, arose out of, or was in connection with his service as a police officer when viewed by the manifest weight of the evidence. Now, Peterson was serving a 38-year sentence for the first-degree murder of Savio when he was subsequently convicted of trying to arrange the murder of James Glasgow, the prosecutor who put him away. Now, the Glasgow case resulted in a separate 40-year sentence. Peterson's fourth wife, Stacy Peterson, has been missing since October 28th of 2007. Stacy's relatives have long believed that Drew is responsible, but Drew has never been charged in connection with her disappearance. And Peterson was charged in May of 2009 in Savio's death. She had been found dead in her bathtub on March 1st of 2004, and a 2012 trial resulted in a 38-year sentence for Peterson. His conviction was affirmed, as noted by the appellate panel court in the pension case. The petitioner police officer's pension benefits were terminated after he was convicted of the murder of his ex-wife, the court said. Peterson appealed that decision to a trial judge. The trial judge held against him. The appellate court did the same. Now, a lengthy paragraph explained precisely why the pension board and the subsequent reviews by the judiciary decided Peterson needed to be cut off from receiving government retirement money. The board found that Peterson used his specialized police training, skills, and abilities to plan and commit Savio's murder. The details of the Savio murder and investigation are described in our prior appellate opinion, the court noted, affirming Peterson's conviction. But relevant to this order, the board made some specific factual findings. The board found that prior to Savio's murder, during a ride-along while Peterson was on duty, Peterson had ordered Jeffrey Patcher, a former co-worker, $25,000 to take care of Savio. On the day Savio's body was discovered, Peterson had called the locksmith, Robert Aiken Jr., on Aiken's personal cell phone to ask him for a wellness check on Savio. Aiken was usually contacted by dispatch for wellness checks, and Peterson was in uniform when he met Aiken at Savio's door. Aiken would not have performed a wellness check without a police officer or other person of authority present. Peterson requested professional courtesy from one of the first responders, telling him that Savio was his ex-wife. Also, as a professional courtesy, Peterson was allowed to be present for the interview of his fourth wife, Stacy Peterson, which was conducted in their home. Peterson was interviewed in the lunchroom of the Bolingbrook Police Department a few years after Savio's death, but before Peterson had been charged with the murder, Peterson told another person, a friend of Stacy Peterson's aunt, that he was well-trained and could get away with murder. Peterson's police training records indicated that he had training in evidence handling and crime scene investigation. Peterson contended there was no nexus between the felony and Peterson's duty as a police officer. The pension board and, again, the courts rejected that argument, and Peterson attempted to argue that there was no nexus between his crime and his job. Rather, the court said Peterson claimed his actions were personal, because Savio did not marry him because he was a police officer. Can you imagine losing your pension and not being able to buy anything while you're in custody? Boy, that could really affect one's quality of life in custody. Boy, that's just terrible for old Drew Peterson there. Or not.
I want potatoes.
You'll get nothing and like it.
Next, our dumb criminal of the day. An unidentified 32-year-old man was arrested about 7 a.m. on Sunday on drunken driving charges after being involved in a fender bender, according to the police. Hours later, he posted a $500 bond and was freed from the county jail, but apparently not for long. Deputies say that he then attempted to break into three separate vehicles parked in the jail parking lot, and the man now faces three new charges of auto burglary. And at this time, he bailed out for $15,000. He claimed he was simply looking for his car keys in the vehicles. Huh. They usually don't release you from jail until you kind of blow zeros. So maybe he had a little something to drink by the time he got out of the parking lot. Don't know. Anyway, don't do that. Okay, thanks for watching. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.